The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Are you struggling to get your children to sleep at bedtime? To discuss some of the best ways to deal with this, I'm joined in the studio by paediatric sleep consultant Lucy Wolfe. Lucy, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us. You say that you might be struggling at nighttime, but your problems start during the day.
Yeah, it's possible for sure that often parents report the challenge might be a bedtime battle or standoff or just an ongoing struggle. But very often that's just symptomatic of maybe other things that could be addressed throughout the course of the day that then would lead us to maybe a smoother, calmer, less challenging bedtime, let's say.
In terms of age range then, what are we talking about here?
Well, I work with children all the way up to teens and beyond. And I suppose this guidance around sleep is fairly universal. So I suppose I'll always, no matter who we're working with, begin at the top of the day and kind of work through how we organise the day, how we are in ourselves, our nervous system, our emotion regulation, our attunement with our young children, the time of sleep and the preparation that we put into before we are hoping that they'll make that transition in.
Well, when it comes to babies, and I do remember this, getting caught in the vicious cycle where the baby wouldn't sleep when the baby was supposed to sleep, and then they oversleep on the other side and they're in a gorgeous deep sleep and you don't want to wake them up, should you?
Well, I guess I would wake babies at certain times in order to keep regulating the internal body clock. So, you know, when you mention about when the baby should sleep,
yeah.
I'm sure, listen, I think we've all been there essentially. And parents these days, they're sort of deranged with this whole idea of a wake window, which is this estimate of how long a baby might be awake for before they need to sleep again. And it can be really helpful. And it can be really undermining as well, especially when we're confronted by the resistant sleeper. I normally wake in the morning time no later than about 7:30 a.m. And that is a really pivotal point to get up, expose your baby to bright natural light and movement, anchor the day with the feed. And then this is beginning to set the tone for the day. I often would wake a young child if they're under a year after about an hour and a half on their first nap. And then I might make that 1 hour if they're over a year. And then I might wake them towards the end of the day. So for children under the age of 8 months, for example, I might wake them no later than 5 p.m. to make room for bedtime.
Yes, because you have to.
Yes, and then as they're getting older, then I take that back further and further because you're always trying to make space for bedtime. And then you see this whole idea of when they should sleep. I think what's missing a lot of the time is, yes, we're looking for good sleep pressure. So this is this whole idea of the wake window and the interplay with the internal body clock. But sleep is about transitions. It's about going from alert to asleep. And it's about how well we prepare them sort of helps us to get them to go to sleep with greater ease.
And at what age should you drop the nap altogether?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. By about 3, and there is differential here, most children are no longer napping. But again, if we look at the research, there'll be a cohort that are still napping and there'll be a cohort that have given up the nap by age 2. I guess what we're looking at when naps are, you know, on the turn and they're becoming naturally retired, very often parents are looking to off the nap thinking it's going to improve the nighttime, and it doesn't necessarily always transfer because the nap need exists in its own right, if that makes any sense to you. So again, we generally are looking for key markers for the nap needing to go. So the most obvious one is they just won't take the nap anymore.
Yes, they'll just drop it themselves.
And then as the nap is getting ready to retire, we often see a little bit of tension between the nap and bedtime. So there's a point in time where bedtime goes quite late and we keep the nap, and then bedtime has gone into the Wild West dynamic, and then the nap can begun to be curated so that we get to a stage where we have no nap, but we probably need an earlier bedtime to compensate.
And some children love the nap. I'm thinking about a niece of mine who's now a grown adult, but would change into her pyjamas every day when she was heading for 4 and just loved that. So you have to pull that back at some stage.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, the nap going is a sign of the brain maturation and the now need of being able to stay awake all day, without needing to take the pressure off and taking your sleep in one phase instead of this multi-phase. I mean, in the early days, your baby might nap 8-12 times a day. And by the time we're about 15 to 18 months, we're down to one. And by three, we're mostly down to nil.
We were talking earlier in the week about sleep anxiety. Mm. Harry Barry was here and he was talking about the medicalising of sleep. Mm. And you've probably seen this over the years as well, as social media has become more part of our lives. Do you think that we are over-medicalising sleep now?
Yes, and I suppose, yes, because it is placed into the health and wellness bracket, and we know that sleep itself, you know, it has such a big impact on every aspect of our well-being, emotional well-being, mental health. And of course, it can be pathologized. But what's coming with that, which is what you were talking about earlier this week, is this like performance anxiety that is attached to the sleep then. So this whole, I must get sleep, I must get X amount of hours, and, you know, trackable, wearable devices are all feeding into this. So I guess I always try and bring it back to basics when possible, that yes, we acknowledge we have a sleep need. There will be variation per individual. So let's say if we're looking at the adult, we're looking for somewhere between 7 to 9 hours. I heard Shane Beattie earlier today talking about the perfect, and everybody's going to have.
Was it seven hours and 20 minutes? Yeah, around
I think
that.
We were like, you know, some will do very well on that, and that would be an absolute goal. And mostly we're looking for mid ranges. And then also the inquiry, like, how do I feel? Do I feel well rested? Or do I feel like I am, you know, at my optimum? Mm-hmm. And that's hard to feel that way because so many other things are impacting our sleep, like what we're eating, what we're drinking, what we're thinking, what we're feeling, the environment that we're creating, the culture that we're living in.
Screens for the older children now. Let's talk about
that. Yeah, like, I mean, it is a big difficulty. I was doing a seminar last week for the neurodiverse population in teenage years, and I suppose the neurodiverse children will struggle more in the sleep. It would seem that there is a higher percentage of that population that struggle with sleep, but these issues remain the same, you know, where in terms of what is hindering our sleep. So screen use is a big one. And of course, what it is doing is waking up the sleeping part of the brain when we're getting ready for sleep. It's going into activation mode. Mm-hmm. But it's doing more than just that, because it's also having an impact on our nervous system. Are we going into the fight, flight, freeze, fawn response? And is that an activation? And of course, sleep is looking for things to reduce so that it can actually make the transition. So as difficult as it is, of course, we would be looking for screens 1 to 2 hours, you know, to have that digital sunset. And that
for everybody, regardless of your age.
Yes. And I suppose parents of young children who have not maybe yet introduced the phones, they're in a brilliant position to have that boundary in play from early on, you know, so that, let's say, parents of older children who the phones have been allowed into the bedroom, it can be hard to get them out because it can turn into a lot of arguments and, you know, impact the relationship between the parent and their adolescent at a time when the adolescent is pulling away anyway.
But I assume you're recommending that the phone is not in
the bedroom. Yeah, try not to. And I suppose whenever we begin to make changes, like taking screens out of the bedroom and like trying to have this digital sunset charging station outside of the bedroom, we've got to replace it with something. And normally we've got to replace it with our parental presence and engagement and sort of replace the screen with connection and family time. And that's another pressure on the family system, because if we let them go off on their phones, then we maybe ourselves have that chance to decompress. But it can lead to the other issues then, where we see children not maybe going asleep until 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, then needing to get up for school.
That's
and
a disaster.
It's a real vicious downward spiral, has an impact on every aspect of the body and the brain. So I suppose, yes, we would try to do that. But we always look at, whenever we're trying to take stuff away, we always try and replace it. And then we can look at that self-management, and that there is a big part of how we're relating with each other, our attunement in those early years, that then starts to transfer into our relationship, how we're talking with each other and how we are in relationship.
Yeah. I put a blocker on my phone at night so I can't use
it. It's a great way to do
it.
Are you using like the brick or something like that?
Yeah, I'm using an app. Now, I'm experimenting with this, but it's amazing how much more time you have.
It's so great. I personally just put on flight mode at about 8 p.m.
Well, you're very disciplined, you see.
I try to be. Well, I try to practice what I preach. I'm not always that great at it, but I do think it does affect my own sleep. And of course, I will try and do anything to protect my own sleep and for those that I'm working with as well.
That's so important. Lucy, thanks very much for coming in. Lucy Wolfe.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.